Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corlin Shad here, your host for this weekend's edition, also your host throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, The KE Report. A lot for us to talk about in terms of some market moves and also balanced out with a new war that started up over last weekend. We talked a lot about how the markets reacted to some of that news throughout the week. So in this weekend show, we're first going to bounce around to a number of different sectors, get more of a short-term outlook, a trading outlook for all of you traders out there. And in the back end of the show, switch a little bit of our focus more to the resource sector, which unfortunately a lot of those resources have also been under some pressure. However, broadly, the last, I guess, our first couple days of the week, we did see a broad rebound in most assets. However, now near the tail end of the week, as we're recording this first segment, we're starting to see a bit more of a rollover. We are chatting right now with Dana Lyons, fund manager based out of Chicago, also editor of the LionShare Pro website. Dana, let's start high level. U.S. markets. Look, the markets had about a four-day bounce after what has been kind of consistent pressure for about 2 months. But on Thursday, as we're recording this, well, it's a rough day. Again, a lot of red on my screen in a wide range of sectors. Dana, is that all the bounce that we're going to get from the broad averages in the U.S.?
Thanks, Corey. Yeah, in the short term, that very well might be the case because we've had a pretty sharp, as you mentioned, basically 1 week straight up. And it's coming off in some of the averages off of some or near some okay support levels. So wasn't surprising to see that. Also sentiment, which obviously we've talked about this, got extremely overly bullish in July in the top of the market in July, which from a contrarian standpoint, obviously was negative for the stock market. Now it approached at the low last week, really approached some extreme levels of bearishness, especially if you look at the options market, some of the put-to-call ratios. So really got down closer to extreme levels on the bearish side. We would like to see even more extreme levels. So if we get, which I think markets are at risk of, another test lower or another down leg lower, at least, you know, maybe even undercut the recent lows, that could instill or induce a, I don't want to say panic, but at least another spike higher in fear levels, which would be another factor in potentially contributing to a nice intermediate term low in the market. Then we could get more of a durable kind of rally maybe through the end of the year or longer. So that would be one thing to keep an eye on here. So after the last week of up moves, kind of ran out of steam, maybe short covering ran out of steam, I would certainly be, and we have been getting a little bit more defensive into this rally, into some okay resistance levels also in the short term.
Well, Dana, speaking about getting defensive, when you look at investors, the way they're getting defensive is a little different. You know, obviously they're not buying bonds because the rates have been screaming higher over the last couple months as the markets pull back. But even sectors like the utilities or consumer staples, which are considered value stocks, you know, kind of a flight to safety, those are getting hammered. What do you make of that makeup where a lot of investors don't seem to be getting safety in the safety stocks?
Sure. Yeah, there certainly has been no rotation into those supposed defensive names. So that's one reason why, you know, when we're advising clients, the notion of defensive assets or defensive securities is kind of a misnomer because they're only defensive at certain times. For example, now utilities, consumer staples have been taken to the woodshed. That's during this jump in interest rates. So obviously the jump in interest rates doesn't make you want to run into utilities, for example. So that could be one factor contributing to pullback there. So from that standpoint, don't necessarily think that utilities shifting into utilities, or for that matter into bonds, is necessarily going to protect you in a sell-off in equities, for example. So, and maybe the most important point related to that topic is longer term, some of the, especially some of our older investors who are shifting more and more into fixed income as they get older, because they've been told, okay, this is more defensive. You want to be in safer, less risky assets. Well, if we're in a longer term bear market in bonds, you know, which we think bond yields are going up for several decades, then that's not going to afford them the protection that maybe they think they're getting, or that their advisors are telling them that they're going to get. So something for, you know, especially, like I said, older, more mature investors, something that they should keep in mind. You know, defensive, quote unquote, defensive or conservative investments are not always defensive or conservative.
So, Dana, one other aspect of the market's a different sector that we have touched on quite regularly are the small cap stocks. You look at the Russell 2000, we've addressed the fact that it has been lagging the markets during that run up for the majority of this year so far. The Russell 2000 is only about 6% away from those washout lows of last year, which is quite noteworthy, I think. How concerned do we need to be about the small cap stocks? And again, if the Russell drops, let's say 7-8% and breaks those lows from last year, what could that mean in a contagion type effect?
Yeah, it's definitely a concern of ours. One of our main focus, one of the hallmarks of our quantitative models is really looking at breadth and broad market statistics, because studies have shown about 70-80% of the cause of the direction of any stock is due to the direction of the overall market. So you want to be aligned on the right side of the market. When the broad market, including the small caps, is headed lower, that puts pressure on the entire market. So that is indeed a negative in the longer term. I don't think it necessarily precludes a intermediate term rally, which I think we're gearing up for. But certainly in the longer term, it gives fodder to our thesis that we are actually in a longer term bear market, which, you know, some people scoff at. But when you consider, like you said, Russell's getting close to the lows from a year ago. If you look at the microcaps, they actually broke those lows. So they're currently trading at multi-year lows, you know, actually, I think 3-year lows since the end of 2020. And then also the value line geometric composite, which we like to look at, tracks the median stock in the market. And that's certainly far off the highs from a couple years ago and much closer to the lows of last year. So from that perspective, it is definitely probably the main concern, the main red flag that we have in the longer term is the underperformance in the broader market. So like I said, in the near term, doesn't mean we can't rally a bit, but I wouldn't hang my hat on a long-term, durable, sustainable rally from that standpoint.
Well, Dana, one of the things that seemed to be pressuring most of the market breadth is when we see the dollar run higher and when interest rates run higher. I know you'd like to look at every asset on their own accord and not really look at the intermarket analysis, but there is a lot of machine trading and algo trading that's based off the 10-year, for example, and also off the dollar. The 10-year got up to 4.88, then had rolled over, so it was almost up at 5%. There's still a lot of calls that we'll see 5, maybe 5.25% on the 10-year. That is such a key input in so many people's analysis. Do you have any technical thoughts or outlook on the 10-year? Have we seen the highs, or could these rates just keep screaming higher?
Yeah, so from our, technically speaking, from our standpoint, as you know, obviously we do think rates go up for decades to come, but around the 4% was definitely a key level to watch. It's roughly the 23 retracement from the top in the early 80s. So we did kind of base there, or consolidate there for the last year. Broke above there last month, which was a major development. Now it could go two ways. If we hold above, you know, that upper four, or call it 4.25%. If we hold above there, the next major upside level that we'd be looking at is probably up above 6%. So definitely it would open the door to that. On the other hand, if rates do pull back and fall back below that breakout level around that 4.25 level, could get a false breakout on the charts and maybe money starts rushing the other way. And that may contribute to that type of intermediate term rally in risk assets like I was talking about. But definitely one of the main developments out there in the financial markets that we've got a very close eye on.
Okay, so watch that 4.25 level. That gives us something to keep an eye on. What about the dollar? The dollar has kept plowing higher, and right now I guess you can argue that it's kind of in this wide range from that peak back in Q3, Q4 of last year, but quite frankly, this year the dollar has broken out to some highs for this year. So where can the dollar go from here? Is there still more upside?
Yeah, certainly. I think you hit it on the head, basically in a range here, right? With the lows around close to 99 in the dollar index where we broke out last year, and I guess early 2022, and then the highs from a year ago up closer to 115. So I think the benefit of the doubt is to the upside right now. Obviously, the near-term momentum is pointed that way. The next key level of the upside would be around that 109 level. And as long as we hold on to, you know, around the, if you look at it, there's a number of key technical levels with around that 103, 104-ish range. So as long as we're above there, then that opens up the upside to 109. But overall, kind of in a trading range like you talked about. So I wouldn't be making big bets either way. But as you guys both mentioned, certainly a lot of money, a lot of algorithms are going to be based on whatever the dollar does do.
Well, let's talk about the uncurrency and the monetary metal of gold. It's usually counterbalanced to the dollar and to interest rates. It did get down into the low 1820s. It's had a little bit of a bounce here up into the 1880s, almost 1890. What do you make of the recent move in gold? Is there any legs to this?
I think it's in the near term, it definitely has its challenges. So if we can shift gears and look at some of the ETFs that we trade, obviously you've got a nice bounce over the last week or so, along with some of the other risk assets like equities, but up in the, call it upper 170s on GLD, you know, looking at 177, 179, plenty of resistance up there. So we've had a nice bounce. I don't think we're out of the woods necessarily yet. Certainly from a technical perspective, I don't see anything that would suggest that. And then silver as well, SLV, plenty of resistance up in the upper 20 range, around 21. So plenty of work to be done. As you know, in the long term, we do think we break out, especially gold, and put in a new up leg to that bull market. In the near term, we continue to chop around in the range that we've been in for a while. So hard to get too excited or too aggressive in either direction.
How low could gold go? Or if we're looking at GLD trading right now, right around, let's say, that 170 level, how much lower could this go?
We've got on the charts, we've got some potential support down around 165, 166. I would say that would be the next line in the sand to look at. If that doesn't hold, then we're below 160 again. So like I said, I would keep our position small at this point and trade around it, you know, as we bounce from level to level. I don't think there's anything too substantial as far as levels are concerned in our eyes that we would take, you know, really outsized bets with. So right now we do have long positions on in gold and silver and in the miners, but like I've been mentioning, we do have a hedge on in the miners, and we'll keep that on until we do improve our technical positions here.
Well, Dana, let's also talk about another commodity that's very appropriate because it ties into the geopolitical tension we see. It ties into supply demand issues, and that's oil. Oil's been on a wild ride. It was up in the 92, 93 range, dove down to 82, got back up into the mid 80s. It's back down again. What do you make of it from a technical basis when you strip out all of the noise?
Yeah, from a technical standpoint, which might be a little counterintuitive, it almost looks like the dollar, you know, it's been trading closer to the dollar, which doesn't makes some much sense to some people, but it doesn't really have to make sense. As you mentioned, we kind of shy away from that intermarket analysis, kind of trade everything on its own merits. And from that perspective, more like the dollar, you know, we're in a range, but holding above most of those, what we would call the pivot level, which would decide or direct kind of the near-term momentum. So I would say right now, the benefit of the doubt to the upside, but still rather range-bound in the longer term. So again, no big bets from us either way, but benefit of the doubt in the near term to the upside.
Dana, what about time of the year? We have talked seasonality a fair bit, and we are in Q4. Some people refer to it as crash season because of history and some of the major crashes we have seen in Q4. And it just seemed weird that these markets, they really started to roll over as we moved into Q4 here. What do you think the seasonality factor is, if at all?
Well, yeah, we do look at seasonality, especially this time of the year, because one of the more consistent or reliable seasonal effects is for seasonal weakness around this time of the year. But that really started, you know, in late summer, really the end of July. And by this point, we're actually getting close to the end of that seasonally weak period. So, yes, this is crash season. October has been the obviously the month of several crashes or waterfall declines in the past, but along with crash season comes bottoming season. So we have seen those volatile periods, the highly tumultuous periods in October, often in the past, but at the same time, it often leads to lows, leads to bottoms, leads to buying opportunities. So I would not dismiss that possibility. In fact, that's what we are looking for, especially if we get another kind of a washout or another scare to the downside. We'd be looking for opportunities to get a little bit more aggressive in buying risk assets, especially the equity market.
Well, Dana, one thing I like about you is that you also keep your eye abroad to the whole global picture. So if we widen our scope up outside of the U.S. markets, is there any foreign markets that have your attention either from the long side or the short side?
Yes, yeah, still Japan, you know, in the longer term, really like Japan. Been on a great run, especially hedged equity. From a hedged currency standpoint, we've really liked it. That did get a little bit extended, so there certainly is some short-term risk there. But we like Japan a lot. There are some emerging markets that kind of broke out really almost a year ago, earlier this year, that have been kind of consolidating and pulling back since, and have, in this correction, have kind of pulled back to test some key support levels. So it's possible that, you know, we do springboard back to the upside. This is just a test of those breakout levels right here, and could be some good buying opportunities right now. But given the near-term environment, too early to make that call. So we'll keep an eye on some of those emerging markets. We'll talk about those maybe in the future again. But right now, too early to call on those. But always, like you said, always have our eyes, you know, on international markets, because sometimes when the U.S. isn't giving us many opportunities, you got to look abroad or look in other asset classes, because like they say, there's always a bull market somewhere. It's our job to find them.
There you go. There is always a bull market somewhere. It's maybe depressing as some of these sectors and markets have been for the last few years. There are opportunities, Dana, and I do appreciate you really wrapping us up with that comment. So, Dana, thank you very much for your time on this weekend show. And everyone, be sure to go check out Dana's website, The Lion's Share Pro, which I will link to in the weekend show posting. Dana, thanks again for your time. Hope you have a great weekend.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.